It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. An announcement from the National Institutes of Health earlier this month said the agency would slash support for indirect research costs paid to universities, medical centers, and other grant recipients.
The change could leave research institutions like UW-Madison scrambling to find millions of dollars from other sources to support labs, students, and staff.
Wisconsin joined with 21 other states that are suing to stop those cuts. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the new Trump administration policy. A hearing in the case is set for today.
We're joined now by a research leader at UW-Madison to discuss the potential financial implications. Joe Handelsman is director of the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. Previously, she served as a science advisor to President Obama as the associate director for science at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Joe, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hi, Kate. Great to see you again, and thanks for having me.
Yes. So put this in perspective for us. How many projects and labs at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery are currently receiving some aspect of funds through an NIH grant?
Well, in the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, which is just a small part of the University of Wisconsin, there are several dozen NIH grants. And those are absolutely essential to what we do. On campus generally, there are 938 grants from the NIH active right now. So it's a large portion of the research support. It's our largest source of research support, both at our institute and in the university generally.
What are these NIH grants supporting? Can you give us some examples of the research?
Well, sure. There's an enormous range. Some of them have very near-term patient effects, and some of them are very long-term, finding very basic discoveries that will lead to long-term work toward treatments. So, for example, in our institute, the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, there's a project moving toward correcting a gene that causes blindness in children and adults. And it has an amazing system because it involves a very innovative delivery process using nanoparticles, really tiny particles, to deliver the gene editing tools very precisely. That's the kind of thing that you can't do on, small grants or from any other agency besides the National Institutes for Health. And there are dozens, probably hundreds like that, that will have direct effects on patients' lives. And then there are others that are actually patient trials. These are already clinical trials, and it's really unsafe for participants if the trial has to be stopped suddenly in some cases. And it's certainly wasteful if you start a trial and you've collected data and you've recruited all these willing participants, and then all of a sudden that trial is halted. So I think this is just a travesty to biomedical research at the most basic fundamental level, as well as the applications that people are counting on.
And the heart of this financial disruption, if I understand correctly, is indirect costs of running the research that would be limited to 15% of grants. What do these overhead costs include?
Well, there are two different ways of supporting research, and both are absolutely necessary. And the direct costs are the ones that most people think of, supporting graduate students or research staff or buying equipment. Those are direct costs. The indirect costs are more at an institutional level. And so, you can't just start a lab in a vacuum. You have to have a large infrastructure around that. And that involves everything from electricity to building costs, to maintenance of the buildings, and all of the people, the staff that support those grants. And that can be everything from financial management to biological safety to human safety and security, police force. There are many, many aspects of the university that wouldn't have to be either exist or maybe even be as large as they are if we weren't doing research and these large research projects. And so that was what the indirect cost for F&A, facilities and administration, was originally designed to meet the needs that you reimburse at a university-wide level rather than project by project.
The NIH memo says this cap would bring the National Institutes of Health into line with the maximum indirect cost rates allowed by private foundations. How do you view that comparison?
Well, first of all, foundations are a pretty small percentage of the overall research costs at the university. So many universities have decided to accept those funds from foundations, even though the overhead costs are lower. Some do pay full overhead, but many limit it. Other universities say, we just can't take the money. It's just too expensive to subsidize the research to that extent. Universities already pay, even at the high FNA reimbursement rates for NIH, for example, the university is still covering half of those indirect costs. That was the original deal 70 years ago, was that universities and federal agencies would split those costs. And so the university is already putting a lot into indirect costs. And so some have accepted that, well, it's worth it to get a foundation grant. We'll just support a little bit more of the indirect costs. But if there were many of those, I don't think it would be possible.
We're with Joe Handelsman, director of the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery at UW-Madison, talking with her about the National Institutes of Health directive that would significantly cut research funding, a result of the Trump administration's attempt to reduce spending in the federal government. You know, Joe, perhaps the NIH is just exploring ways to reshape research processes, make them more efficient. That would then potentially have some disruption. Is that a valid argument?
Well, I don't think so, because a lot of the activities that are supported by these indirect costs are required by the federal government. You know, certain kinds of auditing and training for our staff to keep them safe. You can't get away with not doing those things, because that would be against federal regulations. So they're going to have to completely change the regulations around science and what we're required to do. And frankly, we don't want to stop training staff to be safe in the laboratory. You know, we've moved toward many of these regulations over many decades of research, learning kind of the hard way. You know, there used to be a lot more lab accidents where people were hurt or burned or blinded by explosions or whatever it might be. And those don't happen as frequently anymore because we train our people. But it costs money to train people. You have to have the trainers. You have to have a whole infrastructure to do that. That's just one example of many. So I think that we have, you know, as a university and universities across the country, gotten our systems down to kind of the minimum to meet the federal requirements and to make it possible for our researchers to do the science that they do. There was recently an estimate that said that our researchers are already, this is the principal investigator, the leader of the lab, is typically spending 40% of their time on administration. So we can't transfer more of those responsibilities to the leader of the lab. We want them thinking about science. We don't want them thinking about, you know, learning how to be a trainer for safety or learning how to manage their budgets at an audit level. So I think that, you know, there are other ways to gain efficiency. Personally, I don't think this is one of them. First of all, I don't think any across-the-board kind of cut is ever an effort toward efficiency. It has to be a little bit more selective than that.
Okay, Joe, so if this policy stands, could these funding caps result in layoffs?
Absolutely. No question about it. We will not have, the university would lose $65 million of indirect costs, and probably more than half of that goes to salaries. So I don't know what we would do to compensate for that loss. We, you know, certainly don't have enough state money. Our tuition can't cover it. There just aren't other sources. And so I can't imagine we could get through this without layoffs.
So what then does the university do at this next step? Of course, there is a hearing today over a judge's temporarily blocking this policy. But what are research institutions doing to try to stop this?
Well, I think a lot of institutions are lobbying Congress to try to get help from Congress to make sure that either the immediate shutdown of or reduction of FNA costs is relieved, or it's not written into the next budget, which is hopefully going to be finished next month. And so that's the real concern, is we don't want Congress perpetuating these low FNA costs. Now, the good news is that in 2017, there was an act called the Consolidated Appropriations Act that Congress passed, which prevented any abrupt changes in indirect costs, that it couldn't be done by unilateral action by the White House. And that was based on President Trump's last proposal to do this, which was cutting FNA costs down to 10%. Which he tried in 2017, and this act was intended to prevent that. And so we're hoping that the Congress will stand by that. But individual researchers and citizens, everyone, I think, can write or call their representatives and make sure that there's maximum support, and that the people who represent us in Washington know that this is an important part of the United States economy and biomedical infrastructure.
Very quickly, you were in the Obama White House affecting science policy. How much control should an administration wield over science and research funding pursuits?
Well, there's this thing in the Constitution called separation of powers, and it says pretty clearly that Congress controls the budget. And that was actually a surprise to me when I got to the White House. We would construct a budget for the president every year, and he would pass it along to Congress, and then Congress would make their own budget. And so the president's budget is really guidelines to say this is what the president values, and then Congress takes it from there. And that's always been the way of the separation of powers.
Joe, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kate.
Joe Handelsman is director of the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery at UW-Madison. We talked about how funding cuts issued by the National Institutes of Health under the Trump administration could impact medical research at UW-Madison.
Coming up, meet a Lutheran bishop in Wisconsin who's worried about a new policy on immigration enforcement in churches and other places of worship.
As people of faith, as leaders of faith, it's very important to us that we continue to be safe spaces for all of our neighbors, regardless of immigration status.
That's next here on Wisconsin Today.